Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Welcome back to Throwback Paperback. I'm one of your hosts, Asia Bonilla.
And I'm the other host, Charles Sheeland. And today, we finish a book and we finish a whole series. We get to finish Switch and thereby the whole Savvy Trilogy by Ingrid Law.
For anyone who is new to our show, we're a podcast on the Nerd Party Network. We're best friends and we read and reread young adult books from our adolescence and share them with each other. This week, we're finishing a Charles pick. And next week, we get to start a series that I've read the first half or so of the first book, but pretty much we've never read it, either of us, but was suggested by a listener, and that is the Match Trilogy.
And for the last time this week, I could say that I actually had only ever read the first book, Savvy, but now I've read all three of these books in the series, so that's fun.
So I'll go ahead and quickly summarize the plot for the last time for a little while. So, the motley crew of kids, Gypsy, Del, Samson, Nola, and Tuck, are all still running around trying to find Grandma Pat, and eventually they do locate her, and in an effort to prevent the vision from happening, they eventually actually making it come true, but they do resolve their way out of it, so it pretty much just ends in a happy ending. And I know that's super short, but that's pretty much the basis of the plot. We're obviously going to get into a little bit more details throughout the episodes. But as far as for my impression, I will say I still like have very much enjoyed the series, but I think how I feel at the end, I just feel like this was less so like any of the other series we've read where I feel like we're following like one overarching plot. I guess this is like a little bit more similar to Narnia. I think it was more interesting than Narnia, but it's not like they had like one goal to solve like by the end of the series, especially since we are like following different characters. But I still liked it, but I'm just not like this would never be my favorite series.
Well, I have a comment on that. I think we can talk about that at the end of the episode though, because that's I think a big difference between what you and I both like. But anyway, my impression, I'll save, was that this whole conversation about time was really annoying, but we'll talk about that a little more in a second. I want to bring it back to the text so it makes a little more sense. And my impression was that I felt like the ending, I wanted more conclusion. I didn't feel like the story was incomplete, like I didn't feel like I was missing details, but I wanted just like more of a family happy ending, because
yeah, I feel the exact same way. I feel like that would have just helped make it feel like complete, like the end of a series.
Yeah, I think like we needed Mibs and Ledge to be there, you know, like because those are three protagonists, Mibs, Ledge, and Gypsy, and I wanted to celebrate all of them at the end.
Yeah. I mean, we can
like,
talk.
We should have finished with, like, Mibs. We should have finished with Mibs and Will Jr.'s wedding.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that, I think, at the end of the episode, though. Because I feel like I have a lot to say.
Okay. Well, diving in, I think I made a mistake. I made a boo-boo last episode. I said that they already had the kitten, Captain Stormy, because I'd accidentally read the first few pages of this reading, and then I had to, like, stop. And I was like, oh, my God, stop reading, Charles. So, they didn't have the cat yet, but they get it right away at the beginning of this chapter. So, sorry, that was my boo-boo.
So, now they have the cat, and they end up driving to the hospital to help this couple that they see on the side of the road that their car's broken down and the wife is pregnant. So, they're basically trying to be good Samaritans to take this couple to the hospital. But it ends up working out for them because Grandma Pat is at the hospital, so they're able to collect her right then and there. But Gypsy immediately is like, I don't want to keep Grandma Pat in the hospital. Like, I feel like she needs to, like, be in my sight. And, like, I understand, like, they're trying to keep their savvies under wraps, which I feel is, like, why they don't really want to stay in a public place. But I feel like her not wanting to keep Grandma Pat at the hospital or even, like, just calling an adult for help is just not I almost just combined two words. I almost said a logical, like, logical and rational, but both of those. I just feel it's not logical or rational because it shouldn't be on these kids to keep their grandmother from, like, accidentally killing herself. Like, they need, I think that there needs to be, they need mature adults should be filling that role. And, like, they could have at least maybe called their dad, who I know is, like, on the way, but at least to, like, get some advice and, like, have an adult actually, like, know where their whereabouts are. But anyway, they get her from the hospital and they're like, oh, we're going to, like, take her back home. But I am still just at this point, I was not convinced that they were out of danger because, as has kind of been presented throughout the story, is that Gypsy's visions always come to fruition. So I feel like they are somehow still going to end up at the clock tower and Grandma Pat is going to fall and they're just going to have to save her in another way.
Yeah, I agree. Like, why not stay at the hospital or call for an adult, especially staying at a hospital? I'm like, if the vision takes place at the clock tower and you can just stay at the hospital and watch her there.
Also, like, she literally has Alzheimer's, so, like, they could be, like, she's having a mental breakdown. They could check her in, like, sedate her. Like, that, I feel like, is the only way that they could have actually prevented her from going anywhere. I mean, I guess you could have said it was just, like, preventing the inevitable because her vision has to happen.
Yeah. But then, yeah, well, we're going to, like I said, I have more that I want to say about the visions coming true, so give me, like, 5 minutes until we get to the place in the text where I might have to rant a little bit. But yes, I agree with you. They were being irresponsible.
And on top of that, they definitely shouldn't have left the hospital because Samson, who is the only one of them who has a driver's license, dislocates his shoulder while they were, like, driving over. So he can't even drive properly because one of his arms is in a sling. And on top of this, as I don't know if we've mentioned before, but there's a blizzard going on. So now they have Nola getting behind the wheel, which she only has her learner's permit. So she doesn't even have a license and she's driving in a blizzard.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. So, okay. So at the hospital, Gypsy realizes she doesn't want to read Dell's future or past because she wants him to have his privacy, which I thought was very similar to her sister. Mibs, in the first book, Mibs realizes she doesn't want to read people's minds to get to know them. She said it's better if you actually like each other to, like, actually get to know each other the organic way. I just thought it was a really sweet parallel that Gypsy's, like, invading people's past and future is pretty invasive. Invading is invasive. Wow, that was redundant, Charles. But, like, she's like, it would be better to actually build chemistry rather than sneak information about people. And I just thought that was really, like, it was just like Mibs.
Yeah, it was a nice parallel for sure.
Okay. So now, this is when Dell tells them that the clock tower is actually stuck at 11:58 p.m. Or 11:58, it's a clock, so it could be a.m., p.m. And so they don't actually have until midnight because the clock is there. So in Gypsy's vision, when she sees 11:58, that could be happening at any moment, right?
Yes.
Okay, so this is where I got really frustrated. They all panic, and they're so rushed, and they're running around, and they're trying to get to her, because they're like, Grandma could be falling at any moment. But that's stupid, because all of Gypsy's visions have come true. They've come true completely with no edits. Like, the images she sees in her head, those happen. So, like, I'm trying to explain this really well, especially over an audio format, but
why don't you describe the vision again? What Gypsy saw?
Yeah, so in the vision, she sees the clock tower, she sees Grandma Pat falling, and she sees her arms reaching out for her, right? You're yes. Following me so far?
Yes.
Okay. So, and we know that what happens after the vision, obviously Gypsy doesn't know, because she finishes, like, she only gets the vision. So after what happens might be a surprise, but the actual image of the vision does happen exactly like she sees it, okay? So, for me, it is stupid of them to worry about when they will get there, and it's stupid of them to try to prevent it. Trying to prevent it is stupid because you know it's going to happen. They've all happened at some point, so you know it's going to happen. But the biggest thing is, why are they worried about time? Grandma is only going to fall when they're all there, so that Gypsy's arms can be there to reach out for her. Like, this fall could happen at 3 in the morning, or it could happen at 11:58, or it could happen at 7 in the afternoon, It doesn't matter.
Seven in the afternoon. They're like,
we have to get there.
You mean like seven in the evening? I'm sorry.
Yes, seven in the evening. But my point is that, like, it doesn't matter when Grandma gets there because Gypsy will be there when she does the actual falling. Like,
okay, but what if Gypsy never goes? Like, will she just never fall?
But that's what I'm saying. Like, the way all of the visions have happened so far is that they happen exactly as Gypsy sees them.
But I feel like then that would be the way to, like, I feel like that would be interesting of, could she prevent the vision if she saw herself in the vision and she never goes to this clock tower or this school? Like, could it not come? Like, could it not happen? Or maybe, but also how does she know for sure maybe, it was her arm? Somebody could have been wearing her coat. She just sees, like, specifically her red coat or something, I think.
Well, she knows it's her because she looked in her own reflection.
Okay. So, but yeah, so that's okay, why I would say then, she should have just not gone to the clock tower.
Yes. I mean, also, they're children, and this is, like, a little, like, higher order logic that I'm asking of them. But the time of the vision doesn't matter because Gypsy is in the vision. Like, Grandma will only ever be falling when Gypsy is there. So, does that kind of make sense?
Yes, that totally makes sense. But yes, they are just kids. I mean, Gypsy thought it would be safer for her to personally watch Grandma Pat than leave her in a hospital full of adults. So, I think that she wouldn't have gotten.
And that's the other thing.
Come to that conclusion.
The other problem is also that, like, they keep trying to avoid the vision. And I'm like, if you've learned anything so far, Gypsy, is that it's going to happen. So, the best strategy would be to tell people.
What do you mean by avoid the vision? Like, they're trying to prevent it?
I mean, I don't know if they're all trying to prevent it, but they're trying to catch up with her. And, like, what is that going to achieve? It just makes the vision happen. To me, what I would say is that Gypsy should say, this is when the vision is going to be. And then they should, like, recruit the fire department to have, like, one of those catching beanbag bouncy things.
So, but that's the whole thing. They can't do that because how would she know that her grandma's going to be up there?
But I'm just saying, like, they could have the fire department put the thing out permanently. I don't know. To me,
How is a 13-year-old child?
If they called their parents, they could have dealt with it.
I don't think the parents, they would have been. Imagine if you tried to call the fire department right now saying, there is a chance that someone's going to jump off of our building. You need to set up a blow-up in the street.
Well, also, you could literally call and be like, she's on the edge of a building right now. Because you know it's going to happen that night. Because she's wearing all the clothes. She's wearing the tiara. You know it's going to happen that night.
Okay, that is a little bit, I'm sorry, when you said just have them. You should know, if anything, they could have set up their own personal
bathroom. Well, that's what I'm saying. They could set up their own personal one. My point is that, like, literally, all of them
trying to, I don't know. I don't think I would have risked, like, I understand what you're saying, though, but I think, though, I was going to say, I think for why they're chasing in this is the sense of, yes, Gypsy saw herself in the vision, so Grandma Pat can't fall until she's there, but I think because she closes her eyes and doesn't see the end of the vision, she's assuming that she has to catch.
Sure.
Grandma Pat, like, she has to grab onto her. And she is like, so I think in Gypsy's, you know, 13-year-old brain, that is the only way to save her is on her. She has to grab, and then maybe the other people can help her, but, like, she has to grab her. It's her arms. She's reaching for her.
Yeah, I guess. I just want to bring up the time thing. Because,
but I definitely understand the frustration.
Again, the preventing the vision is a whole nother kettle of fish. The most important thing was when they were worried about getting there on time, I was like, that's stupid. Because it's only going to happen when you're there.
Yeah, I think, again, it's just, it's more, I mean, they're kids and it's four kids and that's doing, like, some time travel Tenet stuff. So I think it would be too much for these little children to try to comprehend. But I do like your explanations.
So they drive out. It goes terribly, as I just predicted. They total the car. It's a complete accident. Car is useless. And then Gypsy freezes time and Grandma doesn't stop. And so afterwards, they figure out that everyone who has the same birthday as Gypsy is immune to her time stops.
And because Del has the same birthday as them, he's also immune. Which, I guess this is like an interesting way to explain it. It was kind of random and like, I don't know, because like,
yeah.
There's just like, there's thousands and thousands of people who would share the same birthday as you. So I feel like that's kind of crazy, but at least I guess we got an explanation. But I don't know if I like that explanation.
I didn't care for it either. Like, I'm glad that we got one as well. But it's also just kind of felt like it was a plot cover because she needed a way to introduce Del. But, like, to me, it just didn't... I didn't care that much. And it also didn't make a lot of sense because we haven't seen any other Savvy have, like, conditions, you know?
Yeah, or have, like, people be immune to it. I was going to say, I think maybe what would have been an interesting, like, way of explaining it is, so we've kind of talked about, like, all the Savvy, like, families and children we've met. It seems like as long as you have one Savvy parent, like, you're pretty much guaranteed to get a Savvy as a child. But I wonder if there was, I thought it would be interesting, or what I thought it might have been was, Del and, like, Grandma Pat might have been immune because they actually had, like, a Savvy, like, family member that's, like, a more distant relative. So they kind of got maybe, like, a more recessive gene of the Savviness. So instead of getting their own Savvy, maybe they're, like, immune to certain Savvies. Or, like, you know, I don't know. I just think that would be, again, like, something that would be a little bit more complicated, a little bit more interesting than just, well, they share the same birthday, so...
I agree. It was an explanation. That's about it. I feel like I'm in the office. It is your birthday, you know? Like, that's kind of, I'm like.
It is your birthday, period.
Yes. If you've never seen The Office, that was an office joke. But that's kind of how I felt about it. I was like, okay, I'm glad there was an explanation and wasn't completely random, but it also. It kind of felt like it was breaking some rules because we've not seen a Savvy have anyone be immune to it yet. So anyway, let's move along. So then they
actually... Also, that could have been something really interesting to explore with, like, Ledger's mom. Like, how, what if, like, she tried to tell someone what to do and they didn't? Or Mibs tried to, like, read someone's mind with a tattoo. Like, I don't know. I just think that was, again, like, expanding the world building.
Yes, I agree. So they go to Laverne's Tavern, not an appropriate place for children to be at all, I might add. It's basically a bar. And they're staying there for a while, I guess, until, like, mom can pick them up or whatever. Because, yeah, they don't have a car anymore. And Gypsy tries to make Del feel better because she says that his Savvy is to paint faces. It's like... His power of doing makeup is a Savvy.
I'm sorry. Imagine somebody gets the ability to stop time or, like, shoot fire out of their hands, and your Savvy is being good at makeup. I'm sorry. Like, unless you're, like, PETA level of good at makeup, like, literally can make yourself into, like, a tree. Or, like... just totally blend, like, camouflage yourself into your surroundings, I don't think that that's living up to the Savvy standard.
Yeah. And this felt so 21st century, like, early 21st century, because Del's like, is makeup not good for a boy? And they're all like, no, it's fine. Boys can do whatever they want. Like, it's...
Well, yeah, too, because when we first meet Del, he's, like, being bullied by these kids because they have a photo of him, and, like, they, like, I think Samson, like, gets a glimpse of the photo, and he's like, is that your sister? And I immediately was like, oh, it must be a photo of him, like, wearing makeup or, like, dressed up like a woman, and I was like... Oh, we're definitely going to get a lesson how, like, it's okay to express yourself, which is a great lesson, and it's absolutely true, but...
We actually got a couple of them throughout the chapter because when they get the cat, Tuck calls the cat Captain Stormy Pants, and Nola's like, how do you know it's not a girl? And Tuck's like,
girls can be captains too. Be girls
too. And it was like, I mean, it was adorable and I loved it, but also it was like, ooh, we're a little heavy handed in like the, let's break down the social construct of the gender binary.
No, yeah, but I mean, I do think probably for the time that was groundbreaking. It just screamed
like, it felt like something that was written in 2016, you know?
Yeah.
I was like, it's right there. But it was adorable. I liked it. Don't get me wrong.
So now that Del has like embraced his inner makeup artist, he gives a full-on makeover to Nola because it's kind of been described that like Nola just has like pounds of makeup on her face and it's like terribly applied. So I'm just imagining her with like raccoon eyes and just like smudged lipstick. I'm imagining like Miranda sings.
You in our freshman concert.
Yeah, with her raccoon eyes, just like black blobs. And so Del's like, no, we have to like make you over before you go on stage to sing. And he like does all this beautiful makeup. And then Gypsy's like, oh, my turn. Like, I want to look like pretty like that. And he immediately is like, Gypsy, like, you are just absolutely spectacular all on your own. Like, you don't need any makeup. And like, that was so sweet of him. But at the same time, the toxic person in me was like, well, what does that mean for Nola? Does Nola need the makeup?
I thought that was really funny because I totally agreed. I was like, in the context of the...
It's like, it was a really sweet compliment, but like, he literally had just given a whole makeover
to Nola. And everyone's like, wow, you look so good. You look like your best self. And then he's literally like, no, I'm not going to do any makeup for you, for Gypsy, because you're already perfect.
Like, your best self is how you are right now. Just no makeup, which is how everyone should feel. But it was just, I was like, oh, that's kind of a backhand compliment. Yeah, which is true
for every single person. But also, like, in the context, it was pretty awkward.
Yeah, but they did not pick up on that one.
So this actually leads me to my favorite part in the whole book. The fact that Nola can't sing. So we discovered Nola's passion. She wants to be a pop singer. They go downstairs and they get distracted. Stupid. And they start to perform on a tambourine, and Nola's singing, and Nola is a terrible singer. And Gypsy's, like, beating the tambourine in the back. She's like, wow, Nola really can't sing. She's so bad. I hope they don't boo her. Like, I hope her heart isn't broken. And I thought that was so funny. Like, it just felt like a really clever resolution, because it would be just so easy for her to be a good singer, you know?
Well, it also kind of, I feel like, yeah, I feel like also her being a bad singer, like, helped Gypsy kind of realize that even though Nola was bad on the stage, like, she wasn't embarrassed, like, because she was happy, like, with what she was doing. And so no one was booing her or, like, trying to get her off the stage because she was confident in herself. Even if she was not very good, she was presenting with so much confidence that, like, you couldn't help but, like, cheer for her. Which after, you know, from the beginning of the book when Gypsy's ex-friend is like, you're just like a twirling baby or whatever, it made Gypsy feel bad about herself, whereas I feel like Nola has really shown herself to be like a good role model for her. And then I also liked, because afterwards Nola even says like to Gypsy, she's like, did you hear my voice? Like, I sound way better in my bedroom than on these microphones. She's like, maybe I don't want to be a singer anymore.
I know. And Gypsy's like, I hope you do something that makes you happy. And it was like, dang.
Also, because even though, like, I also just like that because even though Nola was, like, super confident, she wasn't, like, overly confident. She was still, like, self-aware in the moment, which I feel like is just more realistic.
Yeah. Also, yeah, it was, I just thought it was really funny that, like, she's not perfect and she can recognize that, and that's okay. And she gets her standing ovation anyway because she performs the Heimlich excellently.
Yeah, and literally saves someone's life.
Just literally saves someone's life.
But while all this was happening and she's singing her karaoke song, honestly, all I was thinking about was that they are not paying enough attention to Grandma Pat. As soon as Gypsy left Grandma Pat's side, I was like, well, here we go. Gypsy specifically said she was not going to leave Grandma Pat's side. She just did, which means Grandma Pat is going somewhere. And Samson's like, I'll watch her, but he's goo goo gaga for Nola. So that obviously was a lost cause. So it was just Tuck was sitting up with Grandpa Pat, which is Tuck like...
He's five.
Six?
He's five.
He's five. Okay. They left the five-year-old to watch their grandma with, as they called it, old-timer's disease, or actually Alzheimer's. I did think that was a cute, how they called it that, yeah. The little kids. But, so they leave her, they leave them upstairs in the owner of the restaurant or bar or whatever, up in her apartment.
That was so obvious and they were going to leave. Like, it was so
obvious. Yeah, because they left him unattended. Like, but as soon as Gypsy was like, as soon as Noel was like, Gypsy, you have to come sing with me. I was like, well, here we go. Because Gypsy specifically said she wasn't going to leave her side. And right, look at that. She did. Within like 20 minutes.
Yeah. And now our characters have to go rescue them. But yeah, it was so, so obvious. I mean, I think that any reader would feel that way though, so.
Yes, which they're actually pretty easily able to find them and rescue them. And they get the help of like some Marines who were in the bar.
And this part, wild. This is when the book became a sci-fi book because this became fantasy. Like the Marines are just like, yes, we'll follow you. Give us your orders. And they're just like blindly following this freaking 13-year-old girl who's like, I have a vision. Like,
I mean, it's more than a 13-year-old girl. It's a 13-year-old girl. And then Samson and Noel are what, like 16? So like there's some older teenage kids. And, you know, you would hope that like, you know, Marines like would spring into action if someone was saying they needed help.
I guess. It just felt like, I don't know. If I saw a bunch of delinquent children.
It felt a little random. I'll admit that. It felt a little random that we just had these random people thrown into the mix and like specifically Marines, but it is what it is. So the kids with their new Marine friends are able to pretty easily track down Grandma Pat and Tuck. And they find the school, which is, like, boarded up because it was been closed down for a long time. So they break into the school. They climb up, like, 1,000 stairs, which I was just like, I would have died. There's no way. They climb up the clock tower, and Gypsy gets her moment of, like, literally saying, like, she'll kill herself to save Grandpa. She leaps out to grab her, but luckily Del grabs onto her. Then Samson grabs onto him, and then the one Marine guy or girl, I couldn't honestly keep track of who was, there was one female.
That one was a woman.
Okay, the woman, because she was like the leader, right? Or like one of the...
Yes.
So...
She was like Corporal Hernandez or something like that?
Yeah. Anyway, so she grabs onto Samson, so there's like this little chain of people, but then... Gypsy, like, her hands are getting sweaty, so she's gonna drop the grandma, even with all this help.
So relatable. So relatable.
So she starts screaming for Tuck, because she knows that he can, which we talked about in the last episode, about how he got his savvy early, and now he can, like, grow into a giant. And actually, the reason that Grandma Pat gets on the top of the clock tower is because Tuck grows to carry Grandma Pat, but as he's walking, he forgets about Captain Stormy, the cat, so he drops the cat, and he just leaves his grandma on top of the building, so it's all Tuck's fault.
Well, he's 5 years old. He's only five, so
you can't blame him.
I really feel like it's honestly Samson and Gypsy's fault for knowing about the vision and being like, you know what, we're gonna wing it, we're not gonna tell a single adult. We're from a family of people with superpowers. But you know what? This is best kept secret.
I mean, yeah, they all failed. Anyway, but Tuck does save the day in the end because he grows big and he catches Grandma Pat as she falls and he lowers her down. And obviously the payoff of the vision is very quick and pretty obvious that it did happen, but Tuck saves the day.
And so that's kind of the end. But Gypsy even identifies a problem that we were encountering last episode. We talked about it a lot. We've been talking about it a little bit this episode. The problem with her savvy before it changed is, what good are visions of the future if you can't change them at all? Like, which is totally true.
No good. That's what they are.
There's no point to them.
That's a powerless power.
That's because, like, it leaves you in this place of, like, if she had just not gone out that day, would that have, like, delayed the vision? Because the vision seems, it seems like they all come true at some point, so it's just delaying the inevitable, like, it's gonna happen.
I feel like that savvy would just cause you to, like, totally spiral, like, question every life decision you make, because you're like, is this decision the thing that's going to, you know, domino effect me into this awful vision that I saw in my future?
Exactly.
Or in my friend's future, like, I feel like you would go insane.
Yes. It's just, it's not like if you, you know, got fortunes, like the words themselves, because those could be interpreted differently. But because it's a literal snapshot image that she sees, it's
just... Yeah, it's specific, not vague.
It's... And because there's literally nothing she can do to change it, like, the fact that the actual circumstances occur, it would just drive you crazy. Because look what it made these kids do. They totaled a brand new car.
That poor car.
Anyway.
But... That's anyway, it. That's pretty much the whole plot, and we do get some resolution at the end, mostly that the switch is apparently permanent, except for Tucker, or Tuck, the five-year-old, which Gypsy had seen a vision of Tuck before, like, her savvy switch, that when he turns 13, he will turn really small instead, so it will be the exact opposite. And I guess, like, the explanation that we got for the switch, like, kind of made sense.
The one where, like, they, you know, like, hard times make us, like, adapt.
Yeah, basically because Gypsy asks her mom, like, after everything has gone down, if Grandma Pat has a savvy and if it was that she can change people. And her mom says that maybe when faced with a situation we can't change, we find extraordinary ways to change ourselves. Which I thought was funny because then Gypsy's like, well, why would, like, not being perfect, like, help her in this situation?
And Grandma's like, and Mom's like, my life is a joke now, and I can always entertain myself because my life is pathetic. She says it
basically, her savvy switching now has allowed her to have a really good sense of humor because she'll always be laughing at all of her mistakes. And
I'm sorry, but that's ridiculous. She got shafted in the switch.
I mean, she definitely got screwed, like, but I do think that, like, well, the quote I pulled was she says that a sense of humor can work wonders when it comes to softening the harder parts of life. I think if I am kind of a perfectionist and I, like, work on not being like that, it can be really hard to laugh at mistakes. So I think if she was essentially the perfect person and, like, the embodiment of perfectionism, having, like, her mother-in-law move in with her, I think would have been really difficult for her. Whereas now that, I mean, it sucks that now she has to be a mess, but if, like, that extreme, like, opposite is what gets it so that she can laugh at herself and laugh at mistakes and kind of brush off the little things, I do think that that makes sense. I also just didn't really like her savvy from the beginning because it's not really, doesn't really feel like a superpower.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, her savvy from the beginning didn't make that much sense, but then the replacement also didn't make that much sense. So.
Well, like I said, I feel like hers was more like a state of being, like being an extremely lucky person as opposed to like how some of the other ones are, again, like a superpower, which personally I'd prefer to have a superpower because you have like actual control over it.
Yeah. So final thoughts for as we finish the series, because we're done.
So this is the end of the series. And so kind of how we mentioned at the beginning, I feel like when I finished the book, I just couldn't believe that was the end of the series. Like I felt like how Charles always says, like, he doesn't like when books aren't like wrapped up. I feel like these books all, like, stand really well on their own. And even Charles said, and I agree, that I kind of wish there would have been some, like, savvy family reunion, even if that was Will and Mibbs's wedding. Like, I think that would have just been nice to get to see all the characters, like, we've met throughout these three books to, like, kind of tie it together. Because it just didn't really feel like the end to a series. Like, I felt like these were just three independent books that are, like, set in the same universe, like, talking about the same family, and, like, there's the world building, and there's not, like, one overarching storyline, which is something we found in other series, which I've been reading the Bridgerton series recently, which is kind of similar to this, where, like, each book follows one of the Bridgerton siblings and, like, their love story. And I guess maybe for me, I just feel like I think this would have been more interesting if there were more books. I guess I was mainly surprised by this because it's a trilogy, and I feel like a trilogy is so commonly known as, like, you know, the first book sets the story, the second book is super exciting, it's the middle, it's the climax, and the third story wraps up this, like, whatever the conflict was, like, the overarching conflict. Like, so I guess for me, because, again, going into this, I didn't know anything about this series, and Charles had only read the first book, I just assumed that we were going to get, like, some sort of overarching plotline. Like, that's just what I would have expected for a trilogy. So, this would never be my favorite book series. I really don't think it's even because of the structure of that. Because, honestly, I wish there were more books. I wish we could have gotten maybe not a book on every single child and their Savvy journey. But I think it would have been interesting to just hear more about Savvy's. Like, I think this is a very interesting concept and idea, but I think for me this would just never be my favorite series because it's a little bit too young for me, like how we've been talking about, like, the childish decisions they make. So
yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you that I definitely think it's for a younger audience, so I agree. And I, like, yes, I think that's one of the things that's a barrier for me. I think that it's a preference thing, because we read the Giver series and the Narnia series, which are kind of like this book in that they are disparate stories within the same universe. And for me, that's fulfilling enough. I like a kind of series like that. Like I said, it's a little more like, though those examples are all pretty young kind of books aimed at young audiences, I actually think it's more of like an adult type of approach.
Yeah.
Because I think of like a long series that takes, like, Harry Potter, you know, 7 books, or Hunger Games that takes 3 books. Like, I think of that as something that, like, is written for children or teenagers. Like, and so I feel like actually having separate books for each is more of a mature concept. But, I mean, obviously I think this is a young subject matter. Does that make sense? But
I don't know if I would say that that's a young concept. Like, having an...
No, I'm saying it's a mature concept, and this is young content.
I mean, sorry. I meant that I don't necessarily think that that's, like, a mature concept. I think it's just a different way. Also, I feel like that sort of concept is just more seen in, like, fantasy, where, like, you're... Or, like, fantasy or, like, sci-fi, where you've set up a world, so then you can just tell different stories within that world. But I don't think that's necessarily mature. I think that's just, like, the genre. Because, like, how you talked about Narnia, like...
I don't think of it as fantasy. I mean, those examples I just gave, I guess Narnia is fantasy, but I don't think of it as, because I feel like fantasy is normally following, like, one protagonist on their long journey.
But not always. I'm just saying that I don't think that, but I don't think either is, I guess I would say, I wouldn't say either is, like, more mature than the other. I think that it's just a different way of storytelling. It's either, like you said, following one protagonist through that character's journey, so it's focused on the character arc, versus the world building and just exploring the world. Like, that's just different ways of telling a story.
Okay, I guess. But yeah, I think...
Like, I don't really think one is more mature than the other. I think it's just different ways of telling a story. Because, like... So, yeah, and for me, yeah, I don't think I necessarily, like... I mean, this is probably the first... I guess, like you said, we read The Giver and Narnia, but even Narnia I feel like felt more connected than this. Also, those series were longer. I mean, The Giver was only one extra book. Also, like, The Giver, like, I don't know, I feel like that one, some of those books just made no sense to me. But, or like Gathering Blue, don't even get me started on Gathering Blue. But, like, whereas Narnia, which we were recently covered, I feel like that one made a little bit more sense that we, like, jumped around, because it's 7 books, so it's like the whole history. I mean, it's the whole history of Narnia, so I feel like that makes more sense to me. Whereas I guess for me, I just, my feelings are mainly, I'm just surprised that this was only 3 books. Like, I feel like with how many, even just with, like, the Beaumont family, there's what, like, 6 children,
7 or something like that by the end.
Like, I think it would have been interesting to, like, really, like, I guess maybe because I'm in the Bridgerton headspace right now, like, it would have been interesting to get, like, a book maybe on each kid or a book, like, on every other kid and, like, on maybe some of their cousins and stuff. Like, I just think that would have been, and it didn't have to be, like, where they're connected at all, but how we're seeing each one. I just feel like this series could have been longer. So I guess
I take that point.
That is ultimately why, for me, I was surprised. Because, again, like I said, to me, when I think of a trilogy, I think of, like, you think of, like, Star Wars, the trilogies, how we're following that person. Like, there's just so many, like, major trilogies, like, in books, in movies. Like, so I just wasn't expecting, like, these basically, like, three standalone books that just exist in the same universe around the same family, but not focusing on the same characters at all. I mean, from the first to the second book, we had more cameos of the same characters. But this third book, which I think there was a longer time jump, there's just, like, less connection. So
yeah, because the only character really significant in two books is Samson, and he was barely in the first book. Like, he was the least significant of the significant characters.
Yeah, so I think, and I mean, yeah, honestly, if there's any character we got growth from, it was him, because he was in all three books. And we did kind of see him grow up, like, from being a 7-year-old to being, you know, just after kind of getting his savvy, so maybe, like, 14, when he's, like, helping Grandpa Bamba, like, basically, like, keep his savvy and, like, stay alive, to now him being, like, 16 or 17 or whatever, and, like, liking a girl for the first time and, like, really, like, rediscovering himself, getting a new savvy. But I guess for me, like, honestly, I think the series would be better if there were more books. Like, if we got more. Like, I feel like it feels unfinished.
You heard it here first, guys. I picked out a series Asia wants to read more of.
I don't know if I want to read more, but I do think that the series would benefit from more books. Like, I think that, which maybe, like, I don't know, I guess, do you know, like, has she, like, ever said that she would write more?
She said that this series is done. She's on the website, when I was doing research for the series, it said that she's, the narrative arc that she envisions for this universe is done, though she's writing more books about other stuff right now.
Yeah, I just, yeah, for me, I don't know. That's pretty much my impression. I think that there could have been more books, and I think, also, I think just what would have saved me is if there was, like Charles said, Will and Mib's wedding, like, at the end of this book. But, like, they're probably already married at this point, because he proposed, like, 6 years ago.
They,
like,
may have been
years ago, like, the time jump was from the second to third book. So it'd be a pretty long engagement.
No, the time jump from the second to third book is a year.
What?
Because at the end of the second book, they say that Gypsy had her birthday just then. Because remember, they go back to the funeral.
So
then,
no, they would not have had the wedding yet. Just kidding. So that would have had to have been in the next book, or there would have had to have been a longer time jump, because, you know, you need at least a year to plan the wedding.
It's true.
And they're going to need at least 2 years to plan for all the savvies and stuff to, like, not have everything get destroyed.
Good point. I mean, would you recommend this to an age-appropriate audience?
Yeah, I would recommend this. I think it's, I mean, there's nothing problematic about it. It's an interesting story. It's got funny characters.
Except the incest that happens only in the first book and then gets corrected.
The incest gets corrected, so there's not actually anything problematic. And honestly, the worst part about all the books was Sarah Jane, SJ. She is the bane of the books. That's it. She's the only sucky thing. Like, if she were, and, you know, you gotta have a villain, I guess. She's really it.
Okay. You heard it here first. I agree. I think I would recommend it to an age-appropriate audience. So,
which book do you think would be your favorite book?
Of the three?
Definitely not the second book.
I think the second book.
You like the second book?
I like...
Sarah Jane was enough to knock that into the trash for me.
I like Ledge, though. And I like his journey. And I like that we got a bunch of different savvies. Well, actually, I don't know. I found that one pretty annoying.
I don't know. I guess it's hard for me to pick because, like, all of the, like, conflicts are just, like, it's really childish. Like, everything could have been
solved. That's kind of what I was thinking.
If they would have spoken to an adult. So I feel like that is something, like, it's hard for me to, like, fully appreciate it when I'm, like, I would never do this. But, like, obviously I'm much older. I'm like,
this could have been solved.
This would have been solved in 2 pages.
I agree. Wow. Anyway, that sums it up. Next week, we're going to start a new series. We're going to read the first half of Matched by Ali Condi? Condi?
I think it's Condi, but I'm not 100% sure, but let's go with that.
We'll figure that out. We're going to read the first half of Matched, which is the first book in the trilogy. So that's chapters 1 through 16.
Yes, and I'm super excited to dive into Matched because, like I said, I think I've read, like, the first half of the book, and then I guess I just never finished it, which doesn't mean that it wasn't good. I just think, I don't know, I think I picked this up at some point in, like, high school, and maybe I was just so over, like, dystopian novels at that point, because this is, like, another dystopian novel. I know gross. We did our dystopia unit a little while ago, but we're bringing it back for this listener suggestion. So if you have any predictions, theories, or questions, remember that you can stay in touch with us about anything on the Nerd Party website. Just head over to nerdparty.com/contact and select Throwback Paperback. You can send us an email there and get in touch with the network on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty or on Instagram at @TheNerdParty or Facebook.com/TheNerdParty. And to find me, I'm at AsiaBonia on TikTok and Asia.Bonia on Instagram.
And I'm at Seashells on Instagram. If you enjoy our show, make sure you rate it, make sure you review it, and share it with your friends. And of course, check out the other podcasts we have within our Nerd Party network. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss us next week.
Yes, hit that subscribe. Have a good one. We'll see you next week.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.